I'm Ashley McGee. I'm a health coach, military officer, and military spouse. I'm passionate about helping military women live their happiest and most abundant lives by improving their health. If you're looking for actionable tips and tricks to get healthier while balancing your hectic life, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Healthy Women Warriors Podcast.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to another episode of the Healthy Women Warriors Podcast. I'm Ashley McGee, and today we have a really amazing guest. Sherry Johnson is a coach that specializes in talking about infertility, miscarriages, childlessness. And for herself, after 3 miscarriages and 6 years of infertility, her coaching background and spiritual training has led her to discover a process for navigating those triggers, the feelings of exclusion and inadequacy and lack of purpose, and really find meaning in really her journey and help her clients do the same. So upfront, a bit of a trigger warning, because we are talking about miscarriage, infertility, childlessness, but I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. And really, the whole point here is to normalize these, because so many women deal with these issues and it's so isolating. It can feel so lonely. So I really love having these conversations because I think it's so important to continue just, again, normalizing it. We should be talking about these things because it's something that a lot of us are dealing with, a lot of people are facing. So I hope you enjoy. And without further ado, here is my interview with Sherry Johnson. Hey, Sherry, welcome to the Healthy Women Warriors Podcast.
Thank you. I am delighted to be here. Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you. And you know, listeners know normally the first question I ask is how you're connected to the military. This is a case where you're not, but when I connected to you, I felt like you had so much wisdom and knowledge that is hits so many women just like in the fields and so personally in the military community. I was like, I have to have you on. So I'm really, really grateful that you're here.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
So I want to start with, you know, tell folks a little bit about the work you do around kind of infertility, childlessness, that whole realm.
Yeah, sure. So it might help to start with kind of how I got to doing that work,
for sure.
Which is on that path. I had 3 miscarriages and long periods of infertility in between. And then ultimately made the decision with my husband to move on with our lives without children. Mm. And so it was only about probably 4 years into my infertility journey when I had really started. I had done a lot of work. I had done a lot of therapy. I had taken some spiritual coaching courses. I was already a nutrition coach. And I was working with women on hormonal balance from a nutritional perspective and really saw a need to move into more emotional support and spiritual support. And so I sort of pivoted. I still do a little bit of nutrition work, and that always kind of, it seems to always come into play when you're talking to somebody about fertility, but I really saw the need for support in the emotional recovery through the whole period, emotional recovery after pregnancy loss. And even without that, infertility can feel like so much loss throughout that whole period. So yeah, women just, they need that. I think sometimes they don't even realize it, but they do. I did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like this is one of those topics too, where it's way more common and prevalent than people think. I think it's like 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 women have a miscarriage, right? Yeah. Like it's a pretty high statistic, but it's something that we don't talk about. So I personally have not gone through it, but I imagine, you know, it's really easy to feel isolated and alone.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, it is. You're right. They estimate it's 1 in 4. And because society tells us not to talk about it, you know, from the moment you get pregnant, everyone says, well, don't tell anybody till you hit the 12 week mark. So if you don't tell anybody, then it's really hard to go back out to your friends or your family and say, hey, this has happened and I need help. I need support. So yeah, most women just kind of suffer alone. They don't feel that their grief is valid. So, I mean, many of us
go into that a little bit more. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So a really big theme that I see amongst clients and miscarriage, infertility as well, is this idea that you need to just keep going. You need to be strong, and that your grief isn't valid. So let's talk about miscarriage specifically. Someone who's had a miscarriage will compare herself to someone who has had a stillbirth, and that person will compare herself to someone who's lost an infant or lost a sibling or a child later in life. And they feel like, well, they have it so much worse than I did. I never even met my baby. So I should just be moving on here. I don't really have a reason to grieve. And yet there is so much reason to grieve. There's so much emptiness that follows a pregnancy loss at any stage. So it's something that women are just like, they just go right back to work afterwards and they don't take time off. The number of people that have said to me, you know, I know a doctor who continued to see patients throughout her miscarriage, a singer who went on stage, I went back to work the very next day. So we don't give ourselves that time to just nurture ourselves.
Do you think that's like, I'm interested to see like your thoughts on where do you think that comes from? Is it the societal pressures of like, as women, we just like, we don't get to have emotions. Otherwise we're too emotional and weak. But so there's that, especially in the military community, right? So there's kind of that piece of it. But then also like, I wonder how much of that is the comparison is kind of a coping mechanism of like, because, you know, saying, well, someone else has it so much worse. It's like you're trying to trick yourself into not having to feel the feels. That makes sense.
I think it's everything you said. Yeah. I think it can be a coping mechanism, but that coping mechanism that you just mentioned really just makes somebody bury their pain. Like they just shove down that pain in order to like, and tell themselves, I shouldn't really be feeling this way because it isn't valid to feel this way. The other thing that I think is going on though, is this idea, it's a societal thing that has been taught to us since we were little kids, like, don't cry, be strong. You're strong. Especially you would feel that in the military. I have a friend who's a grief coach and she used to be a cop. And she said, you know, you put on this mask that you're supposed to be strong and you go out after any type of grief or any type of trauma or sadness or whatever it is. And you put on a happy face and you're like, I'm strong. I can deal with this. And I think that comes right from childhood. You know, we're told as little kids, like as soon as a kid, you know, a child, I don't know, bumps her knee or something, we pick them up and say, oh, it's okay. It's okay. Don't cry. Don't cry. You're strong. You're good. So I think there's a lot of that. There's also we're taught to avoid pain. We're taught to replace with something else. So we learn that when we're kids as well. Like usually first when your puppy dies or your kitten dies and your parents will say, oh, it's okay. We'll get you another puppy. So there's this idea of replace the loss. Mm-hmm. Also something I learned from my grief coach friend. So there's all kinds of things that we're taught by society, our parents. I mean, we learn it from all over the place that just keep us hiding and burying instead of feeling.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, I mean, you mentioned after your miscarriage, I don't know which one, but like that you went to work the next day. And now
all three, all of them.
So obviously a lot of, you know, growth and a huge journey to go from kind of that to where you're at now. What did that look like for you? How did that growth and I imagine grief take place?
It was a long journey. I started with therapy. And funny enough, it wasn't because I thought I was grieving. I had pushed it down so far. I thought I was sabotaging my chances of getting pregnant somehow.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, I thought, I don't know, energetically, like, is there something going on in the back of my mind that is somehow sabotaging this? So I wanted to see a therapist to uncover that. We talked about so much other stuff. And that really opened up Pandora's box for me. She was an energy therapist as well. So we didn't just talk about my childhood and kind of what was going on, talk therapy. We did all kinds of other stuff. She opened me up to meditation, to some mindfulness tools. And then I really started to explore. I started listening to Gabby Bernstein and other spiritual gurus and spiritual coaches, and took some spiritual coaching courses myself, and really kind of uncovered a little bit of a formula that worked for me. And you want me to tell you about that?
Yes, please.
Really, it's kind of a combination of meditation, journaling, affirmations. So sometimes I'll start with journaling out, like, what is it that I'm feeling? What's underneath of this feeling? Where did it come from? When did I first feel this feeling? And then I'll meditate to release it. Sometimes it goes the opposite direction. I'll meditate and then journal on something that came up during my meditation. And then I'll use affirmations to kind of deconstruct the belief that was keeping me in that place, and rewriting the story using an affirmation. And really, you know, I had used all of those tools before, but using them in a really targeted way on the feelings and the emotions that were coming up related to miscarriage and infertility and childlessness, that all worked for me to really target it at those specific emotions.
I love how it's really like the exact opposite of your coping strategy at the beginning, right? Where it's just, you know, push everything down as much as possible. And then you transition to not only like kind of facing what the feelings were, but using practices to then release that and rewrite that, you know, that story that your brain is telling you, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, I love that. So, you know, you work with a lot of women in slightly different realms, right? Between like infertility, miscarriage, childlessness. What are the commonalities that you see kind of across those different groups?
Oh, that's a great question. So I think the biggest commonality, first of all of those groups feel grief. But usually by the time they get to me, there's grief there, but there's also all this other stuff. There's anger, there's irritation, there's all these triggers. And I think it's the triggers that are really the commonality. So when a woman has had a miscarriage, or whether she's had infertility, or whether she's become childless, she's just starting to walk that path and it's not by choice. Everyone seems to be triggered by the same things. It's women who are pregnant. It's childbearing, all their childbearing friends who don't understand them. It's all the questions like, when are you going to have a family? Do you have kids? Maybe you should try adoption. There's all the well-intentioned, but kind of misguided advice. Like, have you tried this? Have you tried that? People want to fix you.
People can't see, but I'm sitting here cringing. She's like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
oh. You can imagine, right? Yeah. So those triggers seem to be common across the board. Mm. And I think they all boil down to the same thing. I think triggers, I talk a lot about triggers because it's such a common thing. There are hot buttons, right? Mm-hmm. The things that make us angry. And they are, sorry, I got distracted at least for a second there, but by the noise.
Sorry about that. No. Opening a bag of chips or something.
So when women are triggered, when anybody's triggered, mm-hmm. I like to think of that. Well, we all like to think of that as somebody's causing us pain. Mm-hmm. But the way that I look at that is that person isn't causing the pain. The pain's already there. That person's just pressing on the wound.
Oh, yeah.
So it's up to us to really look at that wound. What is the wound that's underneath of that? And it's showing us what we need to heal. Mm-hmm. So it's when you actually start to get underneath of all those triggers and figure out what is that? Like, what's causing that? Is it grief? Is it something else? Quite often it's this feeling of being less than, or feeling of being flawed somehow, feeling of not being worthy. So those are the things that make us feel triggered. So when you start getting underneath of that stuff, then you can really start to heal and release. And those triggers just become like just little pings. They don't even bother you anymore.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear background noise? I just want to, okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
I think it's only on your end, so you'll probably be able to edit it out if you recorded, if you do the audio separate.
Yeah. I just have to figure out how to do that. I'm like not that good at podcast editing yet. I'm figuring it out. Anyway. So going back, something that came to mind when you were talking about kind of the triggers, especially the things that people say, is I imagine that, you know, especially as women are going through this healing process, boundaries with others are probably mm-hmm. very helpful. But that is, I mean, one of the things that all of us struggle with, right? Maintaining, yeah. you know, keeping and maintaining healthy boundaries. So what kind of advice or tips that you do you have for women that may be in this position that are struggling with, you know, like how do you even set those boundaries around, you know, that topic and to help your healing?
So I think the first thing is just having permission to do that. Mm. So to give you an example, when I was going through my infertility journey, I remember being invited to a baby shower, and I knew there was going to be all these women there who had babies, like infants. They were all in the same stage of life. They all had infants. And then this, and then of course the new mother, you know, who's expecting. I did not want to go. I was dreading it. And my sister said to me, "Cher, you don't have to go. Why did you say yes?" And I was kind of like, because I didn't have anything planned.
Like, yeah.
I assumed that if I get an invitation and I don't have other plans, then I don't have an excuse not to go. But she said to me, like, "You don't have to go, like, take care of yourself." Mm. So I needed to hear that from someone else. So maybe someone who's listening to this, just will hear that and think, oh, okay, I don't have to go. But it's interesting that you ask, because I've noticed that that's come up on a couple of your podcasts before. Mm. And it is, I mean, you can decide that you're going to set boundaries and you're going to go to only events where you know you can fully show up, or you're going to just say, no, I don't want to talk about that today. Or you can set those boundaries, but you won't honor them until you feel you deserve them.
Ooh. Mm. Will you say that again? That's powerful.
You won't honor your boundaries until you feel that you deserve them or deserve to have them in place. Mm-hmm. So you have to feel worthy. It boils down to our sense of self-worth. And this is where I really, my latest fixation is on our sense of worth, because it's highlighted on an infertility journey, or when you become childless and not by choice. It's highlighted when you become a mom too. Mm-hmm. I mean, suddenly you're comparing yourself to all the other moms out there and feeling like you're not a good enough mom. And the same thing happens when you're on a fertility journey. You're comparing yourself to the moms and thinking, well, I'm not as good as them because I don't have a child, or my body's not good enough because it didn't do the foundational thing it's supposed to do. So it really comes down to that sense of self-worth. And when you begin to awaken that, when you begin to build that, it becomes much more easy to honor your boundaries and to set them in the first place.
Yeah. You just made me think of something else too. And so you mentioned that a lot of your journey has also been spiritual. And when you mentioned, like, you know, your body's not doing the one thing it's supposed to be able to do, right? There, you know, depending on what you follow, there's a lot of religions that very much lean into that. So how do you navigate feeling, I imagine, a sense of betrayal, and also, yeah, like when you're, you know, you ascribe to one of those constructs?
Yeah, that's such a good question too. And it's funny, I've had a few conversations with women about this very topic in the last 2 weeks, I think 4 women. And it's come up on a couple of my podcast episodes too. Mm. So yeah, there's definitely churchisms, I call them, out there, particularly yep. in the Christian church, you know, be fruitful and multiply. Mm-hmm. God has blessed me with a child. God has blessed you with a child. There's all kinds of things that we say that indicate the pro-natalism and the pro-child mentality there is within the Bible, within the church, within Christianity. I can't really speak to the other religions, but within Christianity for sure. And so, yeah, when we don't get to have the baby, it can feel like Jesus is punishing us. God is punishing us. And I felt that way too. I think probably everyone does. Even if you're not religious, you still feel like you've done something wrong somehow, or this is karma. There's something that I'm doing wrong. Mm. And ultimately, yeah, it was that spiritual journey that allowed me to start to see things a different way. So I love Wayne Dyer, is somebody that I listened a lot to. And he says, what if everything is happening for you mm-hmm. and not to you?
I use that all the time. That's like one of my mantras.
It's a great one. Yeah. Like that by itself, like every time something's going wrong, if I can remember the mantra, then that really changes things. Like you might not be able to see it right now, mm-hmm. but this, what if this is happening for me? That little, almost like a prayer, that can really shift your mindset to, okay, maybe I can't see it right now, but this is going to lead to something better.
Yeah. So I, as a coach too, right? Like I can't count the number of times that, you know, things that I've gone through, and really, I mean, that's the whole reason I'm here is because of things I've gone through, right?
Yeah.
And so do you feel that that kind of has propelled your, really your why and your drive behind doing this work is because you've gone through things that have prepared you to help others?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yes. I do. You know, I was just looking at a post today on Instagram that said, things don't happen for a reason. And I felt that way too when I was going through it. And now I wholeheartedly disagree. I think everything does happen for a reason. Mm-hmm. And there's meaning and purpose in all of our trauma if we look for it. Mm-hmm. And for me, I would never, like, I love what I do. I hated what I did before I had a corporate job and, mm-hmm. you know, it was like going on autopilot and I didn't find a lot of joy in it at all. But going through my miscarriages and my infertility journey, like that's what led me to where I am now. It's what opened up my whole journey. I wouldn't be who I am now. And I wouldn't be doing what I am doing now. And the reward of seeing women transform after, you know, through their journeys and after they've gone through some coaching with me, like that is the most rewarding thing on earth for me. Like that is my meaning, it's my purpose. That's my coaching business, is my baby. That is my birthing.
Yeah.
In itself. So I look at it that way.
That, yes, I totally feel all of the things. And I'm curious in your coaching then, you know, have you also helped others kind of experience, I'm going to call it a non-traditional birthing, right? Where something else comes into creation because of the journey, because of the struggle, the trauma, the experience?
Not so. I'm just trying to think of an example. Yes. I mean, what I feel is their birthing is that they become new. Mm. So they become a changed person. You are not the same person. If you've gone through a miscarriage, you're not the same person afterwards as you were before. And if you've gone through any sort of fertility journey, you're not the same person after you've gone through that journey. So you're already a changed person, but what most people try to do is go back to the way that they were before. And it never works because you're changed. Mm-hmm. So what I see happening to women is they're embracing that change and that allows them to transform. Mm-hmm. So I haven't watched any of them. I don't know. I haven't followed them maybe long enough, or I haven't seen them long enough to watch them, you know, start a business or anything big like that. But I have watched them transform into something different.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's, you know, just as valid, right? Like how often do we just day to day deny kind of our true selves, our experiences, our collective wisdom, all of these things, and to actually lean into, no, this is who I am. This is what, you know, this is what I've been through, and that's okay, right? Going back to kind of the, you know, having to push down the pain, right? Like it's okay that these are my experiences and this is who I am.
And those experiences have led to who you are, but they don't have to be who you are.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to be the victim. You don't have to be your story. Mm-hmm. It's just a part of what led you to where you are today. That's kind of how I look at it. What do you think?
I agree completely. Mm-hmm. You get to choose your identity and what defines you, right?
Yes.
And I don't think we often realize that that's a choice.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between choosing your identity and choosing a mask.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
And I think we get those confused sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's where coaching comes in, right? Like having the support to be able to walk on that journey, because it's not easy.
No. And it is work. I think that's the one thing that I didn't really think about at first. Mm. Like you actually have to take some action towards your healing or towards your awakening or whatever you want to call it. It doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
It requires you to do something.
Absolutely. So that's a great segue. For folks that are in this realm, right? Anywhere in kind of this this journey, you know, what do you recommend as far as getting started on the work?
So it's different for everyone where to start. I mean, I started with some books. Mm-hmm. There's lots of them out there. I've already mentioned a couple people to you. Gabby Bernstein was one of my favorites. Wayne Dyer, start with some books, sit down, you know, even if you don't call it meditation, allow yourself to sit for a few minutes in the quiet and feel the feelings. Mm. It's such a simple thing. It can be so hard. But it's feeling the emotion that's what's going to allow you to release the emotion. And just sitting in quiet and just allowing yourself to feel the feels, that can be transformative. Those are two things that I would say to start with. I can go on and on. I mean, I've got lots of resources on my website, listening to podcasts that can help you feel like you're not so alone. So hearing things like this, there's lots of fertility podcasts out there. There's miscarriage ones. There's childless podcasts. Search them out. Search out the people on Instagram. You know, it really helps to not feel alone. Just to hear people talking about what they've been through can allow you to feel and resonate with them.
Yeah. And also giving yourself permission on the converse side, right? Like for, especially when it comes to social media, like don't follow people that make you feel bad or trigger.
Yes. You, back right? to the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So where can people find you if they're interested in learning more, working with you?
Best place is my website, sherryjohnson.ca. Sherry's with one R and an I. Sherryjohnson.ca. There's lots of resources on there. My own podcast. I do have a free gift for your listeners, awesome. Ashley. And that is my guide to releasing triggers. Mm. So, going back to the trigger conversation, it's almost like a set of journal prompts that will guide them through how to release that.
Oh, awesome.
So that might be something to get started on as well. And Instagram, I'm at awakening.worth.
Awesome. Yeah. That, first of all, thank you for, you know, that freebie for the listeners. It sounds incredible. And thank you for sharing, you know, your journey, your story, and just, I've been saying this a lot, like lately, I feel, but normalizing these conversations, having these conversations is just, it's so, so important. And I so appreciate you coming on, but also the work you're doing, because it's so needed.
Thank you. Yeah. And you're so right. The more we talk about this stuff, the more we just come right out and put it out there. Yeah. The easier it gets.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Sherry. And for our listeners, keep on living your healthiest and most abundant life. I will talk to you next week.
Yay!
You've just finished another episode of the Healthy Women Warriors podcast. If you like the show, can you do me a favor? Go rate and review it. I would really appreciate it. And once you do, post a picture and tag at Ash McGee Coach so I can shout you out. Talk to you next week.